That whole quote-unquote mistake on the lake idea is not, I don't think we've escaped it yet. And to your point earlier that the city is underrated.
I still feel like I'm still striving for that success. You know, we sit on one of the largest bodies of fresh water in the world. The work that we do here at the Port of Cleveland on our maritime facility supports 23,000 jobs in Northeast Ohio.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of today's episode, episode 72, is Jeff Epstein, the president and CEO of Port of Cleveland, which is one of the largest shipping hubs on the Great Lakes, and who formerly served the city of Cleveland as the chief of integrated development for the city, the place where Jeff has built his roots. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Simply, my first question to you is, what is the best thing that there is to know about you?
Well, the best thing to know about me, I'm a Cleveland homer. Love the city. My friends from college call me Captain Cleveland, and we're joking when I went to City Hall to work there. So love this place.
Has it always been that way for you, or did it develop? Okay.
Yeah, always been that way. I think it developed more in some ways when I went away and was always rooting for the teams and talking about how great it was. And then kind of, I think, being away and coming back made me have even more of an appreciation for it and a drive to kind of give back to the community.
What is it about the Cleveland community that makes you so intrigued to give back to them?
You know, it's home. Grew up here. It's a place that, you know, gave me a lot of opportunity. I think it's a place that is underrated. You know, has incredible amenities, is easy to live in. You know, people complain about traffic, but we have no traffic here.
Truth.
And we've got, you know, I can get from my house to a baseball game in 20 minutes, pay a fraction of what I might pay if I were living in DC or Chicago for the game. People are great. Food is great. We're on a body of water. We can get to so much of the country so easily. It's a great place to live. And I think the thing I was struck by, I lived in DC after college for a while, and my now wife and I came back here, and just like instant community here. It's just such an easy place to lay down roots.
It really is. The people I always find are what make it so amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jeff, throughout your career, you've spent a lot of time building and fortifying different areas. What is it about taking something and making it seemingly better or even more that you've found that you love?
I've always kind of been intrigued by cities and how they feel and how they grow. You know, I think being able to work on something and see the kind of physical manifestation of that in the community is really great. I remember one of my most meaningful moments in my career. I had been working at Midtown Cleveland, and for a while we'd been working on the Dave's grocery store on Chester and opening that up. And I remember the first time I kind of walked into the building, I just had this incredible reaction experience of like, wow, like I for 2 years worked on this project with everybody else, and now it's here. And every time I walk in and see residents shopping for groceries in this phenomenally beautiful grocery store in the city of Cleveland, that Huff residents and residents from St. Clair Superior can have this high quality grocery, as like I help contribute to that, and that's really rewarding to me.
That is amazing. Again, it stems back to the community aspect of it. Yeah. And there's so much value, and it's so validating when you see other people's humanity being uplifted, right? And that's such a necessity to have good food and the access, and you're building that up again.
Yeah, and just thinking about how to build things in this community for residents that can help us attract people to the city, that can help existing residents, but also help us bring more people in. We talked a lot when I was working at City Hall about, you know, are we managing decline or are we managing growth? And I feel so strongly that this is such a great place. We talked about all the reasons why, that doing as many things as we can to get in a point where we're positioning ourselves for growth, where we're attracting people to Cleveland and to the region to live, work, and play here is really what drives my career.
Throughout that building process, Jeff, which piece of the puzzle do you find to be the most interesting?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think there's so much along the way that's fascinating. I think there's the kind of engaging with community members and understanding what it is that they're proud of in their neighborhood and what drives their desire to be here, the kind of visioning and ideating about what can be, and then that process of kind of navigating and figuring things out. One of the things I learned early on in my career is, these kind of real estate development projects and kind of community building projects, they die 16 times before they actually happen. And so there is something rewarding about actually getting through. So I don't know if I answered your question, but maybe it's all of it, from kind of dreaming to realizing it.
I keep hearing throughout this that there's a sense of persistency that's innate. And tying that in with your also love for cities, as you aforementioned, how did you know that you would be successful in this building up of things, this puzzle making field?
I don't know that I ever knew I'd be successful. And in some ways, I still feel like I'm still striving for that success, because it takes persistence. And because if you zoom out and look at all the challenges that we have, we still have so many challenges that we need to overcome. But I think it's focusing on those accomplishments and those things that are moving us forward and kind of looking at things with a glass half full perspective than a glass half empty perspective. And when you start to get things under your belt and see things happening, it's that building of momentum and in many ways seeing other people in the community reacting to the momentum that you're building. Maybe that's the moment that I felt success. I remember when I was at Midtown and we were kind of building a lot of momentum in that neighborhood. When folks would start calling, either calling me or start doing things that were consistent with where we're going that we didn't have a hand in at Midtown, that I wasn't directly connected or related to, but it was like, oh, they get the message and they're just going. That I think is when you kind of have a sense of like, all right, things are moving.
That ball is rolling, yeah. For sure. That's other people are involved in the mission. Yes. That's what it's all about.
Yep.
Kind of on the flip side, we're here at Port of Cleveland, mm-hmm. and we're blessed that Cleveland is located where it is, right? We have all this absolutely. Waterfront. How important is geographical opportunities for the work that you all do?
So I think geographical opportunity is hugely important. We sit on one of the largest bodies of fresh water in the world. The work that we do here at the Port of Cleveland on our maritime facility supports 23,000 jobs in Northeast Ohio, $7 billion of annual activity. That's not possible without being on the water. But I think what excites me is not just the impact that we have had and are having, but what we can be. Yeah. And really thinking about both how we take advantage of the fact that we are on a lake and river, and we have this incredible asset that's water that for a lot of the region we've turned our back on. And so the work to redevelop the waterfront, I was really honored to work on Bedrock's project when I was at City Hall, to open up this, where you can see the river, but you can't get to it, and to create that access. So I think where we're going with that is really exciting. I also think where we're going in terms of the impact that the port can have across our region and helping to advance some of our critical priorities, thinking about ways the port can help us clean up more sites and attract more jobs, the way the port can help us solve our housing crisis, the way the port can help and advancing waterfront development. That's the stuff that excites me.
It's so exciting. And we have endless opportunities partnered with the Metro Parks. I feel like there's just so many natural opportunities here that they all coincide. One of the common misconceptions I would say with shipping in general is that it's, or like just nautical, is that you bring something in and then you leave, it leaves, right? It's like this, that back and forth idea. How would you put that to rest, or what is it more than just bringing product in, taking product out?
Well, it's jobs, right? I mean, all the product that comes in enables us to make the things that we make here. So, we bring in 4 or 5 million tons a year of iron ore pellets. that are mined in the Northern Great Lakes, and they come by ship and they're unloaded. If you've ever seen those big two big black piles out at Whiskey Island, that then gets loaded into barges to go up the river to Cleveland Cliffs. Without those things coming in, there's 2,000 jobs that go away, and all of the impact that a company like Cliffs has on our local economy and supporting family sustaining jobs. So all of those products that are coming in, whether they're coming in from the Northern Great Lakes, whether they're coming in from Europe, because we have direct access to Europe via the St. Lawrence Seaway, those are supporting manufacturing jobs in Northeast Ohio. They're supporting the jobs of the union workers that help load and unload the ships. They're supporting the jobs of the trains and the trucks that help take things from the port to their end user. So it's a whole economy that is supported by our presence on the lake.
It's amazing how it's so much bigger than just the city. Like, I think about the fact that there's only such a few Great Lakes and there's so few cities that have direct access to it, and we're just blessed to be one of them. Right? And like, I think that's often not thought about. That whole quote unquote mistake on the lake idea is not, I don't think we've escaped it yet. And to your point earlier that the city is underrated, all these opportunities show how grandiose it can be and really is. And the people that are here, I think, know that. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for the continual growth of the city and of the resources that we have here to be used in the most effective ways.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we've been, you know, Cleveland was founded here because we're on a lake and a river, right? I mean, and we've had this history of commerce on our waterfronts for over 200 years. So this is, I think it's a continuation evolution. And I think, you know, what excites me now about what's going on is, you know, one, we are bringing more people to Cleveland than we ever have. And so, you know, when people come here and they see how great our downtown is, how vibrant of a city it is, and you know, a lot of people come here and they're like, oh my God, you can't see across this lake. That blows their mind when they come to Cleveland for the first time. So I think, you know, that's exciting. And I also think, you know, we have this once in a generation opportunity right now to create a new kind of access on our waterfronts. You know, we spent a lot of time working on this at City Hall. You know, you can stand on the mall downtown and look at the lake, but it's really hard to get there. And with the redevelopment that's happening with the North Coast Connector, with the stadium site, with the potential to close Burke Lakefront Airport, with what's happening at Shears and Gordon Park, with the work we did at Irish Town Bend, with the work that Bedrock is doing, you know, we are, I think, 10 years away from having unparalleled access to the water for people who want to live, work, and play here. And I think that's going to be a critical factor in us getting to a point where we're growing again as a region.
Okay. So excited for it, Jeff, and I'm so thankful for all the work that you all are putting in for it.
It's you know, so many people are working on this across the region, and it's really this kind of work is it's team sport.
To that point of team and to that point of collaboration, you noted in an interview with the Cleveland Magazine that you were a collaborative leader. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And as a CEO, as someone who's a figurehead, how do you take that and bring it so that your team can be the most effective?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different layers to that. I mean, I think first of it is recognizing that it is a team, right? You know, I am honored to lead a team of incredibly talented people, and you know, it's our collective work. And so really elevating our team, helping to position them for growth, helping to put them in the best position to be their best selves and to succeed is a big part of this job. And then I think, you know, as we work in collaboration, it's understanding that, like, we can't do these things alone. Projects like the lakefront are going to take intense collaboration by a lot of different folks. And so it's understanding the role that we can play, how we can help, how we can kind of build trust, and how we can, you know, again, play the different roles when it's needed. Sometimes it's a cheerleader role. Sometimes it's going down to Columbus or signing a letter of support for a grant. Sometimes it's showing up in meetings every week. Sometimes it's serving on boards. There are lots of different ways in which we engage and work with partners. And I think, you know, you look at projects that we as a port have done, you know, you take Irish Town Bend, for example, that project wouldn't have been possible without us working hand in hand with leaders like Tom McNair at Ohio City, who now has my role at City Hall, Brian Zimmerman and Sean McDermott and the team at the Metro Parks, Linda Sternheimer on our team, who spent hours on this, Land Studio, tons of partners that were required to bring that to reality. There's no way we could have done that project on our own. And ultimately, because of the collaboration, it's going to be transformative for the region.
I think it's that whole notion of many hands make light work, right? Not that it's light work, but you definitely need more to be able to do more. A great mentor of mine, too, always said that the essence of leadership was to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you. And then he said, you know, you could always fill in that adjective of smarter than with whatever, more talented, more opportunistic, or better cheerleader. Like, there's so many aspects of a team that are necessary, especially when the project is as large scale as what we've been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that philosophy in terms of surrounding yourself with smart people and great people and empowering them and getting out of their way and letting them do their work. So all in on that, I'm also a big believer that, when you find talent, and this is to the consternation sometimes of board members or team members, you know, you got to bring them in and you figure out how to make it work and how to make it fit.
I think that's a great aspect that we haven't talked about yet, too. I spent a good bit of time teaching, and I would always kind of encourage the students, like, there's something so innate about someone, and they have gifts that are just true to who they are. And when you find out what those gifts, what those talents are best used for, how you can put that in the team, mm-hmm. the world is your oyster, because people want to bring you in and they need you for what you're great at doing. That's what makes someone great.
Yeah, and I love that process of discovering what makes team members tick and what their unique contributions are. You know, we came in with my team here, and I remember the very first meeting I had sitting right over in our conference room. I read them a piece of my DISC profile, just to give them a sense as who I was. And we did, it's a great tool for kind of understanding team and team dynamic. And we're having a team retreat next week. And I've just been getting ready an exercise about work superpowers. Nice. And having people kind of, all right, think about and bring our, what is your work superpower? What is the one thing that you bring that you're, is a huge add to the team, you do better than other people, that helps move our work forward, and let's share those so we can better work with one another and use one another on our team.
Through those collaborations, Jeff, you have to land deals that have been good for you. What have been those superpower strategies that you've implemented to allow you to land some of your best deals?
I'm an ideator. And so I kind of love to brainstorm, come up with creative ideas. I also am an organizer, and so thinking about how to move different chess pieces around to get where we're going. And so, some of the projects that I'm proudest of have been using those skills. So, one of the great things we did at Midtown that I was proudest of was Cleveland Walls, which was a mural festival where we brought in mural artists from around the world and locally, and did a bunch of buildings on Euclid and Carnegie and Chester. And I think that was an example of, organizing a bunch of different players, coming up with different ideas for how the community could get involved, and pulling off this week-long festival that I think really was a gift that continues to give. Every time I drive down Carnegie, I smile at the mural of the dancer on the House Maltz building. I think those are some of my work superpowers that I love to use.
That specifically too, I think, is such an awesome one for the city, because you go to a city like, I was just in LA last year, one that stands, a wall mural that stands out to me is there's a picture of Kobe supposed to be Kobe. Are you familiar? Yeah, Kobe is a baby, and there's Otani also as a baby, and then both of them have kind of like who they came to be, which are obviously massive figures in their own sports. So I think that just art in general is such a connectivity piece.
It is, and I think it also is one of the, we talked about the great things about Cleveland, and one of the things we didn't hit on was kind of our culture and our diversity. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that comes from the fact that we are a legacy city. We Cleveland is over 200 years old. We've had generations, and we've had history. We've had so much history that some of our history has been forgotten. And I think art, and public art in particular, has a way of bringing those stories forward and creating a sense of belonging and a sense of welcoming. We talked a lot in the work that I was doing at Midtown and Asiatown in particular around how to kind of create, how to use culture as a tool for creating that belonging and bringing the history forward and making people feel included in the change that's going on. I think it's one of the challenges that I think is a city, and as somebody who is in the business a lot of times of creating new spaces and new buildings, is making sure that they are for the people in the community, and I think using art and history and storytelling, I think, is a really great way of making sure that the design of what you're doing helps community.
When you look back a little bit further on, again, some of these deals and tying in the storytelling piece, the mural walls was a great success. Have you had moments in your career where maybe the deal didn't go as you would have hoped, and what did that teach you?
One of my favorite stories about this was a community meeting that we had in Midtown. We were doing some master planning on Euclid Avenue, and we were at Dunham Tavern having a workshop, and one of the residents came up to me and said, "All these tech buildings are great. And I would love all the jobs, but Euclid Avenue used to have a soul. And what are you doing about that?" And I think that was a start for me into learning about the history of Black music on Euclid Avenue. That I think set about a lot of things in motion around ultimately the Cleveland Foundation coming and the Midtown Collaboration Center and the recording studio and the music that's happening there and the East 66 corridor. And so I don't know if so much as it was a failure as a, like, this was us going in and community saying, wait a minute, you got to think differently about what you're doing here and understand this piece of who we are. And that it threw me for a loop a little bit, but I think it's in that way is in which you have to look at failure not as as something that is you just go in the corner and sulk, but like, okay, like, we screwed up, right? Yeah. I went for the first couple of years when I was in Midtown running Health Tech Corridor and was filling up buildings with technology tenants without any engagement with residents who live north and south. And so it's, what do you learn from those mistakes that help make you a different person, a different leader?
Yeah, it almost strikes me as almost like a constructive criticism in a way, right? Like, this is someone who's coming in and saying, hey, listen, we appreciate that you're willing to try and lift everything up that we're doing here, but how about this aspect? And when that information is given to you in a way that's conducive to you to be able to not go sulk in the corner, I think that's so important too. How do you navigate feedback that's effective versus maybe feedback that was perhaps intended to make you go sulk in a corner?
I think you've always got to be listening to feedback. And I think always trying to show a level of respect to the people who are giving that, whether that feedback is coming from a resident in Huff, a city council person at a council table, a developer that is trying to do a project. To me, it's always trying to listen and learn and react the best way it can and, take in that data. And it's just kind of bringing in the wisdom of having been in the community and having worked, but also realizing that you never can say, I know everything or I know best.
To that point, you talked about in 10 years from now, you think we could have just this expansive lakefront access that the whole city can appreciate and then also people can come in for. What would you say is the end game for your work here at Port or just in general in Cleveland? Is that your end goal?
Well, I don't think there's one end goal. Yeah. I mean, we talked earlier about growth, and I think to me, I think a lot in terms of growth, you know, and this is, again, these are not things that we at the port alone control, but having job growth in the city and in the county and the region, having population growth across the region and particularly in the city, having, you know, housing growth outpacing demolition in the area. I think these are all things that, you know, in many ways, the waterfront pieces are a tool to get towards that.
Sure.
And you know, ultimately that growth creates a more vibrant city that more people want to live and work and play in, a city that uplifts its people and provides opportunity and living wage jobs and training and safe neighborhoods. To me, growth is the kind of thing that helps enable all those things, but does it in a way that is authentically Cleveland.
True. So true. And I think that's why it's always the water that becomes the stem. And we talk about the people because those two are just so authentically Cleveland.
Yeah.
All of those are realms that are constantly a goal, to your point too. So it's hard to say that one of these would be the end game because, you know, in theory, it could always just keep going. Mm-hmm. Not even in theory, it will always just keep going, given that we're all human. Looking back the opposite way, when you were a child, or what advice would you give to maybe 10-year-old Jeff, knowing what you've known now, lived what you live now, about his future?
Keep being curious and keep following your gut.
Why?
I don't know that I could have said when I was 10 that like this was the career that I was going to be in. And even if I fast forward, you know, I kind of traced the start of my interest in civic stuff to AP US History in high school. Wow. And government, and some great teachers who just kind of set me on a path. And I always had this sense that I wanted to do something civic. I was interested in cities. I wanted to in some way give back to the community. But I don't know that then at 16 or at 26 or at 36, I could have traced the exact path that my career went to get me where I am right now. And in many ways, my last few jobs at Midtown, at City of Cleveland, and here are all dream jobs. But I don't know that I really would have been able to say like you're on that path, or even been able to articulate the specifics around it. And that's why I think it to me, it's just, you know, trust your instincts, keep being curious. You know, the advice that I give to people who talk to me about career growth and career trajectory is, you know, your 20s are a time to learn about yourself and who you are and what type of environment you thrive in. And you have to work really hard to mess up your career when you're in your 20s, right? As long as you are learning and growing in some way that you think is relevant to where you're going, you're good. Just keep doing that.
That was kind of what I was curious about. When I was reflecting on just this whole situation, I couldn't help but picture, I was like, maybe like 10-year-old Jeff was a big Lego person. Like just this whole, like there's an end project and you're building and there's pieces along the way. And I'm like, well, maybe Jeff was someone who was, super curious, like reading a lot, learning a lot, because you have a vast array of talent and expertise. So and that's kind of where my head was spinning, was that when we get somewhere, we can always connect the dots looking backwards, mm-hmm. but you obviously don't know that looking forward. So I always think it's interesting to hear someone's feedback to themselves mm-hmm. so many years ago, like, hey, it's all going to work out. Yeah. Or through your story, it would strike me to say, like, make sure you pay attention to APUSH and in Gov, right? Because this led you to the points that you are mm-hmm. in now.
Yeah.
And I think maybe perhaps in the rise of social media and just access across the world to every piece of information one could mm-hmm. possibly want or need, there's been a glorifying of seemingly, I guess, like, I don't want to say fun jobs, it sounds so simple, but just like you glorify this lifestyle that perhaps is not what everyone's living, not you, the social media. So I'm always thrilled to hear people who say like, this is how it all worked out for me. And this is how I've gotten to a job that I'm sure 10-year-old you wasn't saying, yeah, I'm going to get into building a city and yep, through ports, you know, working at one of the largest ports in, mm-hmm, in our Midwestern region. Mm-hmm. Like, to see it all put back is so motivating.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think it is interesting in the social media environment, and I've got two high school kids right now that are getting ready to look at college and starting to think about where they're going. And I think that, you know, my advice to them is the same as, like, look, it's hard work. And you've got to be paying attention to the signals and asking yourself, all right, what am I learning from this? And what, you know, and exposing yourself to different things, to help figure out what is your passion and what is going to drive you and who are you as a person. And like that, those kind of things evolve. And I am curious to see how a generation that kind of grew up on social media, you know, evolves, mm-hmm, into that.
How would you say, or what is the appropriate blend of following your passion and following your talent? I think that's another hot conversation.
I guess I'm of the mindset in many ways that, you know, if you work hard enough at something that you're passionate about, you're going to succeed in it. And so I'm probably more of a follow your passion guy, but I also am a rational and logical person too. And so it's like, all right, you gotta follow your passions, but you also gotta look at the signs and the feedback and all of that.
Yeah, I think oftentimes our passions are rooted in some sort of talent that we have. Yeah. So then if you're innately decent at something, you're probably gonna end up being passionate and liking it. So then if you follow the passion, sure, work hard enough at it, you're going to uplift those talents even more to the point that you could be excellent at it. I do happen to think the same. Yeah,
I also sometimes think that it's important to do things that are hard to kind of figure out what some of that passion is, because that passion may not unlock. And if you take on something that is super hard and you succeed at it, that may unlock a passion you didn't know you had.
True. The challenge and the friction is where that real growth and the opportunity comes in.
Yeah, I talk with my daughter about this all the time. Like, you know, she's like any teenager, you know, you take on hard things and sometimes you struggle with those hard things. But the amount of pride she has when she accomplishes something that she works really hard at, yeah, is unbelievable.
Yeah, and how real,
and
right?
And it teaches you something about yourself.
It's like you walking into that Dave's supermarket on Chester. It's the, yeah, same notion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff, this conversation is amazing. I know we're tight on time. I have a closing litany that I would love, right, to dive into here to you. My first contention is that people who live with gratitude at the forefront of their, mm-hmm, lives live a better life, mm-hmm, point blank, than those who do not. No pressure now. What role does gratitude play in your life?
Oh, huge, huge role. I mean, I look all the time at, like, let me think about all the blessings that I have in my life, and let me think about all the people that helped me get there, and let me think about how grateful I am that I have, that my family helps me balance, that my parents put me on the path to a great education, that the community is so, you know, gratitude is huge for me.
It's amazing when we start looking at it from that perspective too, because you can't help but get that butterfly effect where it just keeps growing and growing of all the things for which you're grateful and how bountiful our, yep, lives are.
Absolutely.
Kind of on the flip side, but I think they're intertwined. Do you have any regrets in your life? And if so, what have those taught you?
No. I mean, I think I try to live my life in a way that I'm living my fullest. Maybe I wish that my wife and I would have taken a sabbatical year and lived abroad somewhere before we had kids. But other than that, no.
Sure. Yeah. I think once you have that grateful approach to life, it's hard to say, oh, I regret this, because, yeah, everything leads to the next. Yeah. And it's like, well, I'm kind of okay with, yeah, where it went. Yeah. So, yeah, the third question is rooted in this idea to me that life is a gift. And I think that having a zeal for life is so important. Mm-hmm. And part of doing that, I think, is having something on your calendar that you're looking forward to. Mm-hmm. What's on your calendar, Jeff, that you're looking forward to?
I am looking forward to going to Israel this summer with my family and seeing family over there. Most weekends, get out, and do two things most weekends. One is have Shabbat dinner with my family every Friday night. Always look forward to that and that kind of time to quiet down for the week. Also, most weekends get out early Sunday morning and play golf with friends. And that is kind of just a Zen, peaceful thing that helps recharge my battery.
Breaking bed with family and then hitting the links with some friends. Yep. Doesn't get, right. It's always in the people that I think make it the best. Fourth question for you, only two more to go. Yeah. Fourth one, when you lay down each night and you're reflecting on the day, what is it that you hope you brought to that specific day?
I hope each day I can say I gave it my all and I made it a better day for someone.
All that you've talked about, Jeff, has been derived from that notion of bringing people to betterness to some degree, whether it's putting access in their community, whether it's uplifting what we've lived to, whether it's seemingly offering appreciation for them. So it strikes as consistent. I think that you're probably achieving that each day.
I hope so. Some days probably yes, some days probably no. But
amen for all of us,
try, right?
Yeah. My last question for you, Jeff, is there any piece of advice that you would offer to a specific sect of the audience or just the audience abroad? Kind of like your closing thoughts.
I think I go back to where we started, you know, I think if we layer that gratitude in, I think we should all be grateful for, you know, if we're Clevelanders, for the fact that we are here. And it's a place that is an incredible community, offers tremendous opportunity, and is a place that will get better if we all give to it. You know, one of the reasons I chose to stay here, so I came back after college and living in D.C. for a while in law school to clerk for a judge. And my wife is not from here. We were kind of in our 20s here. And I kind of said two things. One, built incredible community. And two, there's so much opportunity here. Like, I could do more here faster than I could on the coasts or in other areas. And like, I took advantage of that opportunity. And so, you know, I'd say to people who are listening or watching, you know, there is tremendous opportunity here in so many ways, you know, be grateful for it, get involved.
Yeah. And take that nudge, right? Like it stems from community, and community is made up of people. So I think we're blessed with a great group of people, a great community here. So it's definitely an opportunity and a call to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Jeff, I can't thank you enough for this conversation.
My pleasure. It was fun.
It absolutely was. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 72 of the Chats with Clark podcast with Jeff Epstein, the CEO here at Port of Cleveland, amongst many other great talents. I can't thank him enough, and I can't thank you all enough. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. We just keep delivering these top-tier conversations to you. I'll see you next time. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off with episode 72 of Chats with Clark. Thanks for listening.